I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
Oh, you do?
The Mark Reardon Show.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give. Sometimes I find myself hurting from giving too much.
That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
All right, let's get going here for a Monday. And I think it's a significant Monday because we only have a couple of these left before the election. And then it's going to take probably four or five, 6 Mondays for us to decide the election. But hey, it's almost here, ladies and gentlemen. How are you, Sue?
I am well, thank you.
We missed you in the studio on Friday. I don't think you were here, were you?
No, I was not.
You had an issue at the home. But at least you had the home base to
report
in from.
Did you see what I did?
Yeah. I can't remember what happened.
Did you have issues? I thought, I am going to wash this window. I know I could do it. It's one of those tilt-in ones, mm-hmm. and it tilted in and went cattywampus and out of its track, and I couldn't put it back in, and I can't leave the house with a gaping. It was too heavy. No neighbors are home, and it was like that.
Wait a second. You live in the city of St. Louis, and you think you can't leave your home with just like a wide-open window? Why wouldn't you be able to do that, Sue? I don't get that.
Maybe, you know what? Actually, maybe I could have, but I
have
just felt a little
weird.
No, you didn't
weird.
Want to. Yeah, you didn't want to.
No.
What was that, Ethan?
I said, do you not have any faith in your city?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I do, but...
So Ethan is, you know, a relatively new producer. He's been with us for, I don't know, 6 weeks at this point because Abby left. But he's very good with the skills on the dry erase board in the studio. Yeah. And, you know, we now...
It's a gift.
We have a World Series matchup, and he put some logos up there for the Dodgers and for the Yankees. This is tough, Fred, because I do not like either of these teams. And, you know, it's the two big market teams that everybody hates. I suppose I will watch because I did watch over the weekend. I was rooting for the Tribe to kind of take down the Yankees
yes,
after that exciting
yes.
game the other night. And they tied it again. What was
yep.
it, Saturday night? Or was it last night? I can't remember. But then they end up losing. So the World Series is set.
Nights.
Yeah, right. That was a pretty exciting series. Now, let me just touch quickly on the Mizzou front because I'm just the worst fan ever. And everyone would agree with this. So I had a pretty big project to do at the house. You know, Michael's flooring is helping me with some. When I say helping me, they're installing hard flooring in the two rooms. But I decided to do some of the work. It actually ended up being a little bit more of the work than I thought. So I was pulling out carpet and pad and the little staples and stuff like that. So this was around the time of the Mizzou game on Saturday because they kicked off at 11. It was homecoming. I decided not to go to the game because, you know, I had stuff to do at home. And quite honestly, I am not really thrilled with the way that the Tigers have been playing. So they go down at one point. Ethan, you can help me out with this probably, or Fred, if you watch. 17-3, I think, was one of the scores, right?
Mm-hmm.
I turned the damn thing off. I turned the TV off. I didn't watch any football. I cranked the music. I was doing my carpet stuff, and I was getting some texts, and I just was in a crabby mood because I knew that they were going to suck because they pretty much sucked in every game that means anything up until this point. Don't be fooled by the 6-1, you know, record at this point. But they actually won the game. Like, what happened? I was even, if my friend Jeff Drew is listening right now, King, you're texting me about this game the other night. Honest to God, I thought that Mizzou had lost. But they came back. Brady Cook gets injured, Sue. I don't know if you know this. So he's, you know, he's the Mizzou quarterback.
That's a big deal.
He was a great quarterback last year. Something's been a little off this year in my mind. I don't know exactly what it is, but he got hurt early. And to the point where they took him to get an MRI, and then he came back from the hospital. He must have gone across the street to University Hospital because it's right there. He comes back in. He leads them to this victory. Now, Cusumano's going to talk about this because Frank had Brady on his show the other night. Or last night. What am I talking about? I'm acting this Monday, right? It was last night.
So you hit the sideline and your conversation with Coach Drink goes like what?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about it. I was so juiced up. I'm trying to remember exactly what he said, but you know, he came up to me and said something to the nature of, you know, You know, do you have any limitations? And I said, no limitations, let's go. And he looked back at me and said, let's go win this thing.
All right, so they got it done. And then this is kind of cool, too. He heard from some folks, Brady Cook did, after the victory.
So Peyton writes what to you? Oh,
I guess I should identify, because the Peyton Manning. You ever, is it Peyton or is it Peyton? Because I'm confused by that.
So Peyton writes what to you, and then you write what to him back.
Yeah, you know, Peyton texted me last night and said, you know, what a gutsy performance. Great job. Keep it rolling. And I said, thanks. I appreciate you. Looking forward to next week. And, you know, just a little text like that definitely means a lot.
So next week is Alabama. That's a pretty big game this weekend in Tuscaloosa. The Crimson Tide's not that good either. The Tigers are, I think, about, what, 13-point underdogs at this point. But look, you know, their season can go one of two ways. The way it has been going, and then they get smoked by Alabama, or they turn things around and they get back into the discussion for the college football championship. By the way, congratulations to Illinois. They got another great victory. I have to pay attention to my friends with the ugly orange, you know, colors, because they're pretty good right now, and they're ranked ahead of Mizzou.
Did you see their jerseys that they wore this past week?
I did.
So it was, they were honoring 100 years at Memorial Stadium, and they had custom painted helmets, and what it was meant to be doing was honor the heritage and the jerseys and the uniforms back when Red Grange was playing. I mean, how long ago would that have been? I mean, a long time ago. Each helmet, 2 hours to hand paint. The entire team.
That's
hand
amazing.
Painted helmets. I mean, they're old fashioned. CBS did a great job with the broadcast. They kind of started it off. You remember when the Cardinals and Giants played at Rickwood Field and they did like the black and white?
Yeah.
They did something similar to that for
CBS.
Oh,
I missed that.
The reporter on the sideline wore a flapper dress. It was really cool, actually.
I did not know that.
They did a really good job with it. But real quick, back to Brady Cook. Did you see his quote about only having like two games left to play at Faro Field?
No.
He said, I've only got 2.5 games left on Faro Field.
Don Faro is named after Don Faro. That's okay.
I'm not missing this one in a hospital.
Yeah.
Comes back, and the MRI looked ugly. I actually saw two MRIs. One of them was of his foot, obviously. The other one was a picture of his rib cage. It was a bunch of dogs in him. You know, they said he's got that dog in him coming back.
I haven't seen the pictures. Well, so what, I don't know. We'll talk with Frank about all this, and we'll see where it's going to take us for Tuscaloosa. I don't know if he's going to be healthy enough, but we'll have that conversation at 4:45. Let's talk about retail politics for a moment, ladies and gentlemen. And what's happening nationally right now is actually really, really interesting, because you can just kind of feel the panic amongst the Democrats, especially in the states that they refer to as the blue wall. And I would point toward Wisconsin and Michigan. And one of the things that I've been talking about here on this radio station is African-American voters. And I've always said, I don't think that, you know, you're going to have a huge swell of people turn out for Donald Trump that are African-American, but it might not take a lot. And also, if people stay home, then it's the same thing. So every once in a while, I'm just going to tell you how it goes. Fred, I've told you this before. So I'm driving around in my car. I do a lot, you know, in the car. I monitor Fox because I have Sirius XM. I swear to God, and this is one of my criticisms, every commercial break on Sirius XM for Fox, it's different than they air on TV, is for Trump and his gold sneakers. And it's driving me nuts, because all he's doing is hawking gold. And for those of you who do this and you listen, it's not comfortable. And it's, you know, to the point where you're like, really? Quit hawking the gold sneaker. I know it's a commercial. It's pre-recorded. But the reason I bring it up is because I'll flip back and forth. So I flipped on CNN today, a rare moment when I do that. This Harry Enten guy, he's kind of like their polling guy, right? Who's the guy that's on NBC got the map?
Kornacki?
Yeah, Kornacki's one of them, right? But then, you know, a lot of them like their maps and stuff like that. Oh, the other guy on CNN is John King. Oh, he likes to do it,
John
too.
John King. Yeah.
So Harry Enten is kind of their new polling guy, and he talks about the trends and things that are happening out there.
If you believe that Donald Trump has somehow become less popular over time, let me change your mind about that. In fact, he is more popular at this point in the campaign than he was at this point in the 2020 campaign or the 2016 campaign. Look, he's still underwater, right, with a negative 9-point net favorability rating, but that is higher than he was in 2020 at minus 12 points when he nearly won, and it is way higher than the minus 27 net favorability back in 2016 when he did win. So I think there's this real question in Kamala Harris's mind, in the campaign's mind, why is Trump more popular now than he was at this point in 2020 and 2016? And I think that is why you're seeing the sharpening attacks, because they want to put him back down to here.
Yeah, well, so what's happening is they can't put him back down to there. And the attacks are being sharpened because they know that they're falling back in their internals. Now, I'm not going to tell you this thing is over. I'm starting to think it's over, but, you know, It's based on who's going to show up at the polls. Now, on the retail politics front, yeah, one of the things that I've said, and I'm going to tie this in with what happened at McDonald's, but African-American men do not like Kamala Harris. Listen to Harry Enten's numbers, and then we'll go to McDonald's with Trump here in a moment, too.
And sometimes there's a trend line that I never noticed before and make me go, whoa. This is one of them, all right? This is the Democratic margin among black men under the age of 45 in presidential elections. You go back to November of 2012, what do you see? You see Obama by 81.
So this is really illustrative, okay? 81 in 2012. Now listen to the trend line here for the Democrats.
Clinton only won him by 63. Then we're all the way down to Biden last time around by 53. A tremendous drop already. And then you take a look at the average of the most recent polls, and Kamala Harris is up by only 41 points. That is about half the margin that Obama won them by back in November of 2012.
Whoa! You know what that is? This is what the sound, if George were here, this is what we play, because that is a big, big L for Kamala Harris, and that's why they're panicked. So then you have, and I think one of the reasons is honest to God, and these voters, they know, they can tell the difference between real and fake. African-American men, Hispanic men, what are they, misogynistic? That's what the Democrats will try to tell you. They don't like her. They don't trust her, and they don't like her. So Trump goes to McDonald's in North Carolina, and he makes French fries.
Hello, everybody.
Sir.
So, my first day at McDonald's. I'm looking for a job.
Hello, President Trump. I'm Derek Giacomantoni. I'm the owner.
Oh, well, that's a good owner. Must be a wealthy guy, huh?
Now, look, these things are staged, right? You have a situation where, what's going on here? You guys look all very confused.
Hold on.
Did
that
I do something that's going wrong here?
Audio.
All of a sudden, I looked at the room, and the room looked very confused. These are political events, so there's a bit of vetting or staging. It's a photo op, right?
Well, yeah.
It's a camera op. But that doesn't mean that the people that you're going to hear here, they're not fake. They're real people. They want to make sure, in Harris and Biden, all politicians, you're not going to go to McDonald's and say, hey, let's just take random people through the drive-thru, because they may say, hey, I hate your guts. So you're going to have a managed event, certainly not as managed as Kamala's, but he makes the fries. He starts to interact.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Look at all the fake news over there. Hello, everybody.
You can fake this, right?
And you know, this is compliments of Trump, okay?
Yes, thank you. Mr. President,
yes.
Please don't let the United States become Brazil, my native Brazil.
Oh, we'll keep it good.
Please, please.
We're going to make it better than ever, okay?
Look at that.
How are you?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Nice to see you.
So it's not an accident that you have people with accents that are going through that drive-through line. He's trying to illustrate the support with Hispanics in particular and people who came to this country legally. So that was Nayora, who is from Brazil, and she talked to Fox after this.
I was contacted by the Trump event committee, and they asked if I was going to be willing to attend the event, and they would send me some more detailed information in the last minute, which happens just a few hours before. Said if you could meet us at this place, you park your car in this spot, and we'll meet you over there. Little did I know, you know, whole Secret Service was there, and local police, state police, Philadelphia police, lots of security. So we went through the security.
So she's just talking about the process and what happened. And then she kind of got to the point about Trump and why she feels like there's a connection there.
It was like meeting a friend. He looked us in the eye. The way he communicated with us, the way he greeted my children on the back seat, it was incredible. My kids were, I cannot just believe that I shook Donald Trump's hand. I'm not going to wash my hands for the next few days. So he just communicated with them. His looks and the way he shook our hands, like it was very genuine.
It was genuine.
See, that's
and
the
I
difference.
Don't care if it is the difference, Sue. And I don't care if it was managed or not. Of course, it's managed. It's a political campaign. It's a presidential campaign. You're going to manage these things. But here's the headlines. I love this, too. So if you go to, and you'll remember all the headlines that were very similar when Kamala does some of the stuff that she does, or when Tim Walz can't load a shotgun, right? Very similar headlines. The New York Times, French cuffs and French fries at Donald Trump's McDonald's gig. The Washington Post, Trump serves McDonald's fries to supporters in staged managed campaign. Stuff. What I love about the legacy media is, again, that's fair.
You
can, but
They never say it about her.
They never say it about her. Rolling Stone, Trump makes fries at McDonald's in bizarre attempt to troll Harris. Bizarre attempt. They're so disconnected at Rolling Stone and Mediaite and some of these. They keep trying to, well, and they do it because they know that the legacy media will pick up their headlines as well. Here's the Independent. Trump serves disturbing message through McDonald's drive-thru window about whether he'll accept election result. They still want to go to that. So they can't stand the fact that he's connecting with voters right now. Here's a barbershop owner talking to him right now in the Bronx. Now, he ain't going to win the Bronx, right? Doesn't matter. This is symbolic.
Now, in the past almost 4 years now, I'm losing my business, basically. The money's just not there.
It's your business?
It's my business. I started it for the past 10 years, and the only time I knew I made it was when you were in office, so I could speak for myself.
Right.
And the thing is, it's like, I don't know what more to do. How can we make the economy come back?
How do you get to the bottom of
this? So here's what we're doing. Number one, it all began with the oil.
So that's, by the way, that's Lawrence Jones from Fox, the other voice that you hear in there with the barbershop guy.
Around with what I did with oil. We had the greatest. We were energy independent. You remember back 4 or 5 years ago, $1.87 for a gallon of gas. We actually had it lower than that for your car. $1.87.
So he goes on there about energy prices, but that's a real thing. You know,
yes,
it's not
it
only the way that you have to pay for your employees or your supplies, all the other overhead you might have, but the energy costs in particular. I addressed this even from a personal standpoint a couple of weeks ago. I started looking at my bills, and they have been outrageous this summer.
Well, he actually knows what he's talking about, and you, when you hear him, you think, okay, yeah, he's got a handle on it. Never does Kamala sound like she's got a handle on anything. Yeah.
Dave Strom was a guest last week from Hot Air. He's really, I love Dave's work on Hot Air because he's really a good writer, and he wrote about this class divide. You know, he's great about talking about this stuff. Senator Lamping's been great over the years. He dialed into this. John did in 2016. Batya, who was really, really good on the class stuff because, you know, Batya's not, Fred, you know this, she's not a conservative. She's
right.
Kind of a liberal, reform liberal, but she understands what's happening with Trump with the class warfare aspect of it, especially how the Democrats try to play those games. But he wrote about this, and David kind of nailed it. It's not really about race or party. It's about class right now. And you kind of see this in the polling of white educated voters, especially if you went to a fancy school, the cultural elite, they, you know, are going to vote for Kamala Harris no matter what. You got Liz Cheney out there. There's a good example of her, you know, campaigning. She's a former Republican. I don't care what you decide to do with your vote, but you're out there campaigning for someone with these policies. That's horrible. And it's embarrassing, but that's Liz Cheney. This is what you see is what you get, right? So you have that crowd that's always going to vote for Trump or for Harris because they hate Trump. They don't like what happened on January 6th. They think he's a white supremacist, blah, blah, blah. But then you have blacks and Hispanics, the working class people, the backbone of this country, trending in another direction. White, suburban, white-collar voters, educated, so-called educated, they're not for Trump, right? That's what, especially suburban women, and some of that's because of the abortion issue. But, you know, the situation with the class issue here is really quite stunning because you have an educated class that finds people like you who are listening right now despicable, deplorable. This goes back to Hillary Clinton. They don't think that you're worth anything. You're so crass because you support Donald Trump that you'd even consider voting for Donald Trump that they want to restrict your mobility. They want to restrict your energy consumption. Think about the control. A lot of this, and Martin Gurry, Fred's trying to get a hold of Martin. He's a guy that wrote this column last week that I loved, and I might get to it here this afternoon. You're talking about, you know, a situation where the elites look down upon us here in Missouri, in Arkansas, in Oklahoma, in the other flyover states, just because you think that America should be a country that has borders that are protected, that you think that we should have less money confiscated from your paycheck instead of having more money confiscated that, by the way, isn't even going to you as an American taxpayer. It's going to people who aren't even in this country legally. So everything is set up, in my mind, for a Trump victory in a couple of weeks. It really is. And I think that a lot of this is trending in a right direction, but you just don't know, right? And by the way, I don't think we're going to have a result on election night. My sense would be maybe a couple weeks after election night. I hope I'm wrong about that. Trump was highlighting a lot of the North Carolina voters today, too. They're standing in long lines. They may not even have a house, but they're voting. We're coming back with Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. Coming up next.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I got Sue's News for a Monday edition in the next hour. You know, we have not visited with our friend Brad Young, 97.1 FM Talk legal analyst. We're going to do that. Sue, one of the stories that we'll follow this week is the trial for Daniel Penny in New York City.
Which one?
He was the guy.
The Marine.
Yes. And I got to tell you something. This one's so confusing to me because I keep looking for a reason that this dude should be on trial for murder, and I have no idea why he is.
None of us do.
Right. So we'll get to that. Brad has taken a close look at that. We'll break it down. We got Cusumano coming up here to talk a little Mizzou football, Illinois football, and some baseball. And Steve Malenga from the City Journal in the 5 o'clock hour will talk a little bit about these crime numbers that have gotten worse in the last couple of weeks because they've revised them and tried to make them more accurate. So when Kamala Harris did her 60 Minutes sit down with Bill Whitaker, this is one of the answers and questions that came out.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen.
Okay, it really didn't matter what she said there. It was just really kind of offering an example. So that's what aired on 60 Minutes. But then this aired on Face the Nation.
It seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
All right, so they cleaned it up. And we're going to talk about this a little bit with our friend Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago, who wrote about this issue and others. How are you this afternoon, Charles? Happy Monday to you.
Well, I came from a middle-class family.
Yeah, you have to start that
way. She would have done better saying that than serving up that word salad. That all it was missing there was vinaigrette.
But here's what's interesting. So a lot of us flag that, including you. And I'm like, wait a second, that's a different answer. You're trying to clean it up. So 60 Minutes is then pressed. And one of the things that a lot of us want is the entire transcript to the interview. Doesn't seem that difficult. But they're getting a little pressure from media outlets. So they put this statement out that says former President Donald Trump is accusing 60 Minutes of deceitful editing of our October 7th interview with Vice President Kamala Harris. That is false. 60 Minutes gave an excerpt of our interview to Face the Nation that used a longer section of her answer than on 60 Minutes. Same question, same answer, but a different portion of the response. When we edit any interview, whether a politician, athlete, or movie star, they strive to be clear, accurate, and on point. The portion of her answer on 60 Minutes was more succinct, which allows time for other subjects in a wide-ranging 21-minute long segment. And then they say, remember Mr. Trump pulled out of this interview with 60 Minutes and the vice president participated. So listen, I'm a guy that's been editing audio and video for a long time in my career, and I'm going to rate that statement as partially true, Charles, because that does happen. You may Camo X might do a story down the hall, and they may have a longer story, and then sometimes you do a shorter version. That's acceptable, but here's what's not acceptable. First of all, when you do it in a way to make the subject appear better, which they did there, and then couldn't this all just be settled if they release the whole transcript? And they won't do that. So I'm not giving 60 Minutes or CBS News any kind of pass with their, excuse here because they won't release the full transcript.
I think that's exactly right. The larger issue here, there are really two larger issues, I would say. One is about the media, and the other is about that candidate. About the media, mainstream or legacy media has completely lost the public's trust.
Completely.
I mean, and this is just the latest version. It's fine for them to do editing, but... And what they said, let's assume that what they said was true. It still doesn't give them any reason, as you said, why they are not releasing the whole transcript. And in fact, I know Republicans who have not gone on 60 Minutes because they were afraid of the opposite kind of editing. They thought that it would be edited in ways that would make them look bad. And well, I think they had every reason to be
sure.
scared.
Sure. We have good examples of that. When Tiffany Justice went on 60 Minutes last spring to talk about what was Moms for Liberty, they completely did that. You know, the opposite. They deceptively edited that. And we had her on the air, and a lot of people did because they had to highlight that. But, of course, once you see it, once it's out there on the network, well, then what's done is done to a certain extent.
But the other part, that's exactly right, and the other part here is the candidate. Look, when you blow an interview by people who are backing you on The View, of all things, it's like you struck out at T-ball.
Yeah. Well, I like that analogy. So where does that bring us right now? I just did my monologue, Charles. You have Trump doing some brilliant retail politics, and all they can say is, well, that's a managed event. Of course, all political events are managed. You have Harris in the blue wall because I think they're a little worried right now because you see polling that's very tight in Michigan, in Wisconsin in particular. Then, of course, you know, a lot of focus on Pennsylvania. So we're 2 weeks out. A lot of people have voted. You have record turnout in Georgia where they predicted, of course, the new terrible law from the Republicans was going to restrict people from voting. North Carolina, they don't even have homes and they're voting right now. So this thing, I don't know what kind of closing message can still be presented to change minds. Trump even said this today. He doesn't really understand who undecided voters are. This thing is kind of locked and loaded, and now we just got to wait for the numbers to come in.
I think that's right. The polling shows that all seven swing states are within the margin of error. But if you look at the betting markets, they favored Harris during basically the first month and a half or so of her candidacy. She had all the media behind her and all the rest. Those are now 60-40 against her. So the betting markets could be wrong. I mean, they're sometimes wrong on football games, but on average, you don't make money betting against the line on football games or baseball games or anything else. But I think that the trend is Trump's friend.
He's even making, look, he mentioned this today, the betting lines.
It's hard to believe you have undecided voters. I do hear about them, but you possibly do. But I think, look, if you believe in what's happening with the polls, if you believe in what's happened, they have a new phenomenon now, we'll call them the betting polls. I don't know if people are gambling on them. I can't imagine that's a proper thing to do, but perhaps they are. But one of them just came out, I guess the big one, we're 63 to 33, something like that. That's a pretty big margin. I don't know if they know what they're doing. I have no idea who they are, but it's a very big poll. They quote it all the time.
The point is everything you just said, because, yeah, it is interesting that those particular odds have opened up a little bit more. And I guess we feel that the momentum has shifted to Trump, certainly.
I think that's right. I think that part of the problem could be that the more people see of Harris, the less they like. But it also could be that she has really unable to say off the top of her head what her policies are for anything. And apparently today she changed her mind again on drilling. So I think that, she has a problem. Anybody who's a vice president in an unpopular administration is always going to have a problem. But she really hasn't figured out a way to deal with that, and she's just awful at dealing with impromptu. Wait a minute, my screen just froze. I can't complete my answer.
Yeah, that's what happened. Well, it happened to her.
It actually happened, and all she could say, I mean, it was a Ron Burgundy moment.
Well, that doesn't surprise me in that you're going to see. Look, people feel that. You know, we were just talking and kind of addressing the issue of Trump at the McDonald's. You can kind of feel, and I know a lot of people that hate him don't want to hear this, but he does come off as more genuine. Certainly, it's a staged event. All political events, especially at the presidential level, are staged. But he's resonating in ways that I think a lot of the Democrats certainly had not expected this time around. Have you taken a look? You know, I lived in Wisconsin for a long time. That's a weird state politically. But Michigan really fascinates me right now because in most of the polling, in the Real Clear Politics average right now, he's up 1.2 points. If he wins Michigan, and I would assume that a lot of that's going to be driven by auto workers, right, and people who want their jobs to not go to wind and solar and EVs.
That's exactly what it is. I've said that from the very beginning, that everybody's concentrated on a relatively small Arab Muslim vote in Michigan, and that will hurt this particular Democratic candidate. Actually, I think for the wrong reasons. They have said they call Joe Biden supporting genocide, and they say the same thing about Kamala Harris. I don't think that's true at all. But I do think that every automobile company is losing huge amounts of money on EVs, and this is just not something that auto workers can tolerate. They're just going to back out of backing her. They're going to support Trump.
Well, and that's where I feel, you know, she's in both actually, I think she's in all three, and I don't think that's ever happened. Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So I guess credit to the Democrats for not ignoring Wisconsin, because that's what Hillary did last time. But that certainly, I think, indicates panic. And here's my standard question every day of the campaign, too. Where the hell is Tim Walz? Where's that guy? Do we know?
Well, I think, he's proven to be just awful as a campaigner. And one of the problems that the Democrats have is that they picked the wrong vice presidential candidate. And they could have and should have picked
Josh
Shapiro from Pennsylvania, who is very articulate and smart. But he had this big problem. He was Jewish.
You know, I have a piece. I'm going to let you go, and we're going to talk one more time before the election, but I have a really good piece of audio with Josh Shapiro being pressed, believe it or not, being pressed by Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, and he can't get out of it, and that was interesting as well. Charles, 2 weeks to go. We'll talk probably next week or the Monday before. Great to hook up on this Monday.
It's great to talk to you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Have a great week. That's Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. We're coming back. We got Sue's News for a Monday edition coming up here after Fox News. I'm going to spend some time here with our friend Brad Young, 97.1 FM Talk legal analyst, on the Daniel Penny case. And I will say, this is one from the very beginning that I don't understand. He's the former Marine who put a homeless man in a chokehold, and the guy died. Who was threatening people on the F train in Manhattan. And here was Daniel Penny after this. It's stunning to me that this is even a charge, that he's going to trial. It really is.
The main threat that he repeated over and over was, I'm going to kill you. I'm prepared to go to jail for life, and I'm willing to die. And I acted in a way that would protect the other passengers, protect myself, and protect Mr. Neely.
So they say that the jury selection, which started today, could take weeks just for jury selection. That's real efficient in New York City, isn't it? It takes 3 weeks just to find a jury, which is a case.
Three weeks?
Yeah, for a case that shouldn't even be going to trial. Here's Paul Morrow on the defense.
Is his defense, justification is the legal term. And what it really comes down to is that he was justified in doing what he did. There's no denying. Everybody knows that he actually put the chokehold on Jordan Neely. His defense is going to be he had to do it. The prosecution, who has the burden of proof, is going to have to say you went too far. You were either reckless or negligent, depending on which of the two charges they're trying to show. That you went too far, you could have let him up once the danger was mitigated.
So, you know, I always kind of take a look at these cases from a variety of angles. And this one, I'm thinking, okay, what is it that I'm missing on this particular case
right,
that would lead not only to a charge potentially from, you know, the prosecutor in New York, but also perhaps a conviction? And the one thing that the New York Times pointed to is, and I don't know that we've ever seen this video. I'm not even sure that I remember any reference to it. But here's the line in their story about this the situation with Daniel Penny and Jordan Neely today. Mr. Penny's actions, according to prosecutors, became criminal when he refused to let go of Mr. Neely long after he had gone limp. And this is the key line. When Mr. Penny finally released his grip, a journalist who had filmed the chokehold, a journalist, of course, mm-hmm. there's a journalist, quote unquote, kept his phone's camera trained on Mr. Penny, who stood over Mr. Neely's sprawled frame, staring down at him and not moving to help. Mr. Neely was pronounced dead that day at Lenox Health Hospital. Here's what I want to know, okay, from the journalist that was on the F train, right? Did the journalist on the F train catch anything that happened before this?
Thank you.
The other people on the damn train thought that their lives were in jeopardy? Because I think that's kind of a valid point. And if I'm on that F train and I'm my daughter on the F train or I've got kids and I'm worried about a homeless guy who's ranting and raving is going to take me out, I think that Daniel Penny is a freaking hero. And I don't care if he didn't go to help him after he put the chokehold on or not, because he potentially just saved my life and that of my family.
He did. And of course, you know, actions can be interpreted two different ways. Maybe he was just making sure that the guy was not going to be able to harm somebody.
Well, right.
We don't know.
I just don't understand that they could go to trial here. But, and Brad's going to address this, this is a four-minute video. And apparently they did capture things before that. And also, there's recorded statements to detectives in the hours that followed the testimony of eyewitnesses from Mr. Penny. Now, I don't understand how that could be something that is, you know, used against him. The other thing that we'll ask Brad, because I don't know the answer to this, typically, if you're someone on trial, let's face it, in most of the high-profile cases, murder cases, you don't take the stand, right? Right. Now, let's face it. Most of the reason is because people are guilty. And you take the stand and
you open them up to questioning, right, and that could take them down.
But in this particular case, I hope to God that Daniel Penny, because he seems like someone who could relate the story in a calm way and express the danger that people win. So I hope he does take the stand. We're going to dial into this a little bit more after Sue's News with Brad Young at 425. Hang in there. Fox News coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.